life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. I am Brian Smith, the man who thinks popcorn and gravy might be edible. And this is episode 7 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Tonight I am joined by unemployed Protoss Commander and DEFCON 2.co.uk scribe, Anthony Askew. And we welcome to the Dynamite in the Brain family, tea enthusiast, Mega Man fan and shouter, Gary Hedges.
Good evening. I like the intro.
Oh, well, yes. It took a lot more breath to get through this time.
Hello, people.
Hello.
Nice to have a guest. To have a guest.
Our very first guest.
I feel honoured to be the first guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could be the last, depending on how it goes.
Right, and we're here today to talk all about the Deke co-productions, mainly from the 1980s.
Yay.
We saw a lot of in our childhoods. Definitely me and Gary did. And Gary's on the show because around the first week one of Dynamite in the Brain, he and Anthony were arguing about which was better, Cops or Jason the World Warriors.
Yeah, loggerheads.
And we shall address that later. But first of all, let's get to know Gary a little bit more.
Uh-oh.
What sort of cartoons were you into before you actively knew what anime was?
As a kid, my absolute favourites had to have been Transformers and Jason the World Warriors. They were my two favourites. I think, for me, Transformers was probably my bigger favourite, purely because you had the toys over here, whereas Jason the World Warriors had a toy line, but I don't think it ever made it to the UK.
Very unsuccessful, I've heard.
And then, yeah, most of the other stuff, the usual things that kids our age watched, stuff like the He-Man cartoon, Thundercats, the real Ghostbusters, all the good stuff.
Nice.
And what was your entry point into anime fandom? Because you're sort of between mine and Anthony's ages, aren't you?
My entry point to anime was a somewhat random one. It was the thing that a couple of friends from probably first or second year of secondary school had joined the manga club that Manga Entertainment did.
Yeah, I remember.
And I kind of heard about anime through them, and they were like, oh, it's like cartoons, but better. I did watch Akira when it was broadcast on Channel 4, but I had no clue what was going on. And I think I watched Akira 10 years later, and I still have no clue what's going on. But the very first thing I watched that I was shown, I believe, was AD Police and Cyber City. I think, in fact, it was the Cyberpunk Collection, which I loved. That then led me to my first anime purchase, which was Bubblegum Crisis on VHS, which I bought in Tower Records in London on a complete whim, just because it said it was done by the people that did AD Police. And then from that, I got hooked. And then the other main thing I picked up at the same time was Slayers.
Yeah.
Which was obviously not the series, because that wasn't out over here. It was the OVA, so it had Naga in it with Lena rather than Gowrie and co. But I was a big Slayers fan and a big Cyberpunk fan, loved all that stuff. And basically, I kind of went through for the first few years before, obviously, the internet and everything. My awareness to anime was basically things that either me or friends would pick up on a whim, and it was kind of word of mouth. So I wasn't in any kind of tape exchanging clubs and stuff. So I made a lot of good purchases. I also made a lot of bad purchases. My first viewing of Urutsuka Doji was definitely a surprise. Almost put me off. Some of Manga Entertainment stuff was good. Some of it was less than good. But no, that was kind of where I got hooked from, really.
Yeah, I met you in 2004. I can't remember. Was it at the so-called Lubicon, or was it later at a...
I don't know if it was at LubyCon or it might have been pre that, because you was at DairyCon as well. So
DairyCon was later. Yeah, these were.
Was it?
Yes, that was 2005.
Can we have a bit of explanation of what Luby and DairyCon?
Right. Okay. Luby was somebody we knew called Louis, and he organised like a meetup of various sort of anime fans from what was then the Anime England website.
Rest in peace.
Well, Luby actually was he was a moderator on Anime Europe, which was the forum that Anime England splintered off from originally.
Yes, and so
history there.
There was a meetup in Nottingham, and I know I met you in Nottingham, but I can't remember whether it was then or whether it was later in the year when you met up to go and see something at the Rock City.
Yeah, that could have been the Tsunami Bomb gig.
Yes. And
I think it was, yeah, because it was the Tsunami Bomb played, and then we went and boogied afterwards. And then that was when we first, well, I first watched On Back. That was good.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yes. So, what was your first convention, UK anime convention?
It was an IACON, and I think it was IA 2002. Right. I think it was IA Returns rather than IA Again. I think that was 2002.
I would have been there as well, but,
yeah, that was my first thing. And it was obviously when I attended that was pre Anime Europe, and it was actually, we found out about, there was me, and Tristan and a few other friends. We all found out about it purely from a comic shop that had some flyers, and we thought it'd be cool to go and check it out and see what new anime is coming out from Japan and stuff. Yeah. And then obviously from IA Returns, that was obviously had the flyers for Anime Europe, and that was how I ended up signing up to that and then kind of getting involved in the anime community, which would lead me to meeting you fine gentlemen.
Yes, I think I was the same. I think I might have been on there beforehand on 2003. So maybe it was leafleted in 2002 as well. Because 2003 was the year I cosplayed as Luffy from One Piece.
Okay.
And that was with other people from that site. But
well, I think the year I went was when Aya was showing like One Piece, I think like episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I don't know which year, if that makes sense.
No, I can't remember.
Because that would have been, I think it was, obviously that was back when UK cons could show fan subs, or I don't know if they could, but they did. So like, I must admit, it was a really good convention, because obviously back then, not getting into the social element so much, we went to an anime convention and actually watched a hell of a lot of anime and found out about so many new series that we ended up liking. Which was quite cool.
Yeah, I think I was generally in a similar situation. Up until probably exactly the same timeline as you, as sort of Anime Europe, then Anime England, and then horribly immersed to the point that I'm doing a podcast.
Yeah. No escape.
No. And have you ever cosplayed, Gary?
No, surprisingly. But I'm one of those people that if I wanted to cosplay, I'd be really fussy about it. So I'd only want to cosplay a character that was my kind of frame. So that kind of makes me a bit limited.
Didn't you always plan to do who was it from Rival Schools?
I'm trying to think what his surname is now. I keep thinking of Umehara, but that's the guy that plays Street Fighter. I was originally going to plan to cosplay Daigo from Rival Schools. And if I was to cosplay, he'd be a good choice because of his size and built.
Yeah.
But I looked at how much it costs to have a custom fitted male Japanese formal school uniform made in my size, and I then decided not to bother.
Fair enough. Right, let's move on to the topic. And we're going
absolutely
to have a quick rundown of the Deke. This is basically the Deke shows made from the 80s, which had Japanese animation studios involved in some way. Sometimes they're very involved to the point of sort of co-productions. Sometimes they might just be doing in-betweens or even just backgrounds on them. So let's talk about Deke. I'm not going into a huge history because I'm hoping to have our friend Ivan on who can tell us a bit more about French animation. But it's a French company created by Jean Chapelain. And it turned into Deke Entertainment later. It was founded in 1971, but then he sort of started doing original productions in the early 80s. I think there was one called Before Ulysses 31, which is the first one we're going to be talking about. There was a show called Archibald the Magic Dog, which I've never heard of until I started looking up for this show. But the reason I wanted to do a show about this is because around the time Carl Masek died, the guy who was behind Robotech, so a lot of American fans saying he's like the most important person in Western anime fandom. And I was kind of thinking, well, maybe American anime fandom, not really to people in the UK or definitely not people on the continent. And it was more sort of co-productions that we got in the UK in the 80s rather than sort of adapted anime shows. So there's a lot of Deke stuff we got, which are co-productions and shows where Japanese studios were working on, and then there was some Spanish shows as well, and various other things. Like, I'll probably do another show at some point about Saban Entertainment, because they are also involved in bringing shows across, where they'd be a European co-production, they'd buy out and then dub. So things like Oxtails and Wowzer started life as European-Japanese co-productions, which were then...
You see, I didn't know that.
Taken to America, dubbed, and then sold to the UK. So I didn't know that until decades later.
The voice acting in Oxtails was pretty amusing.
But, Saban is involved in the story of Deke as well. A lot of the shows we're going to talk about had songs where Chaim Saban, I think that's how you pronounce his name, is credited as a co-writer with Shuki Levi. I'm going to put a link on the site to an article from The New Yorker from 2010, which is sort of a good history of Saban. And while he's credited on those songs, he didn't do a hell of a lot of writing on most of them. Most of it's Shuki Levi's work. And it's important work. That, I mean, a good reason why a lot of these shows were so popular is down to their incredibly catchy theme tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And
totally.
Various other stuff he's worked on is also very helpful. He can write a mean cartoon theme tune. Another guy, just so I don't keep on bringing him up, because he seems to work on every single thing, is a guy called Shingo Araki. He shows up a lot as animator, and then eventually sort of mecha designer, and I think probably animation director as it goes along. He's a legendary character designer and animation director. He's got a lot of credits from Japanese productions in the 70s. But yeah, he worked a lot on these Deke shows. So rather than bring him up every single show we talk about, I'll talk about him now. And let's move on to the very first one, which is Ulysses 31.
Ah, classic.
Indeed. This was made in 1981.
It must have been rerunning for several years then, because obviously I was born in 1980, so...
Yeah, we didn't get it in the UK until 85.
Ah, that would make more sense.
It's what Wikipedia is telling me. I imagined it was earlier than that, but...
Wikipedia's got to be right, of course.
Absolutely. And so this was sort of, I think, Philip Schofield was in charge of BBC Children's
Things. He was indeed... I think he had Gordon the Gopher at that time. It was
I believe so, yes. And
that annoying cretin.
And he had a very sing-alongable song, which is still regularly on the karaoke at various UK animations.
It's a classic. In fact, if you look on YouTube, there's actually a video where during the opening credits of Ulysses 31, instead of showing the opening credits, they actually showed you Philip Schofield singing along, and I'm not kidding. Although you couldn't actually hear him, but that's probably a good thing.
I'll try and dig that link out as well then.
Epic.
The plotline of the story is basically a science fiction version of the Odyssey, with a lot of liberties taken. So the hero is Ulysses, who pilots a spaceship called the Odyssey, and he's accompanied by Telemachus, his son, and Yumi, a blue-skinned alien who they rescue in the first episode and causes all the problems of the ensuing series. Not her herself, but the fact they rescued her and her brother from being sacrificed, which makes the gods of Olympus very annoyed and makes them travel among unknown stars until they find the kingdom of Hades.
That's the one.
Yeah, so basically the rest of his crew are frozen, and the only other guy who's around with them is No-No, a small robot companion.
No-No's awesome.
By awesome, do you mean really annoying?
But that was part of the charm. It's a bit like Oon from Jason the Ward Warriors. They were just the kind of token mascot that everyone had to love.
Yeah, you kind of had... Yeah, Snarf as well.
Yeah, Snarf, another one. It was one of those things. You needed a mascot.
Yeah, well, there was also the Odyssey's computer had a speaking role as well. But generally, those were the... characters who were in every single episode. And then each episode was, they'd go to a planet and it would be some sort of twist on a particular Greek myth. The one which I remember is the one based on Sisyphus. I can't remember. I think it's like a scrap planet and there's a guy who has to keep on taking a ball of scrap up a hill and then it rolls down again the other side. And basically, Ulysses goes along episode by episode, further annoying the Greek gods by... solving all these problems. And eventually, spoiler alert, he does find his way to the Kingdom of Hades and gets home.
So, oh, that's nice.
It's but yeah, it's one of these shows which sort of it had a bit of a continuity to it, but it also definitely had an ending, which was something you often didn't have on.
Yeah, a lot of those old ones, they would be ongoing, but they'd kind of end would yeah. not happen.
After the frustration of the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, I think it was nice to have something along like Ulysses 31. And it was produced with Tokyo Movie Shinsha, who are a really big animation company in Japan. And they're famous for Lupin the Third, Aim for the Ace, Anpan Man, Detective Conan, and Bakugan, amongst umpteen other shows. Also working on this show is Studio, I think they're pronounced Nui or Nu, but they're the co-creators of Macross. And their involvement on this was they did mecha designs for the show, which is why a lot of the spaceships and sort of the strange things they encounter on the alien planets look so great. Mm. I've not... Yeah, so it aired in 1985 in the UK, and then but it was repeated on Channel 4 in 93, which I think was before the, it would show before the Big Breakfast, where the hoobs are now. And then by those things, it got repeated on various different satellite channels after that.
Cool.
And according to Wiki, it says it's still airing on Jetix.
I would like to watch it.
It is. And it's out on DVD as well, and the box set is actually very cheap.
Yeah.
If you compare it to box sets of things like Cities of Gold, and even the box sets of Jace, Ulysses' box set is actually very cheap.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I'd recommend it, definitely.
I wish I'd seen this. I don't know how I have it, because it looks awesome.
It's really good. Kind of one of those things about Ulysses that struck me when I was a kid was the fact that in every episode of it that I'd seen, no matter how much, like how bad things got, Ulysses never ever showed an ounce of fear. He was one of these like ridiculously fearless characters. A lot of characters would kind of get worried and stuff, and even He-Man did in some of the episodes of that, but Ulysses kind of, he seemed to take everything on the chin, which I think was pretty cool.
Mm. And he also looked like Barry Gibb from the Bee Gees.
And he's got the pearly white teeth as well.
Oh, gosh. That's fantastic.
But yeah, Ulysses is definitely awesome.
I want to mention the intro again. The intro is fantastic. I haven't even seen the show, but I've had the intro on loop since doing research for this.
And it's it's awesome.
It's it's fun. I've even got the French version as well, which is even pretty good as well.
Cool. Cool thing about the intro is if you hunt around on the net, there's actually a full song version of it, and it's actually a full, like, 3.5-minute song with an additional verse.
Oh, goodness.
Which is actually pretty cool.
That's glorious.
It's still relative to the cartoon as well, but it's like a full song.
Gotta hunt that one out.
Righty-ho, moving along next, we just mentioned it, Mysterious Cities of Gold, which... this time the animation studio, I think TMS, let me just check, let me just go back to my list. Mysterious Cities of Gold, this time it was NHK, the Japanese TV channel was involved in the production, and the studio involved was Studio Pierrot, who are famous for Eurosite Sura, Yu Yu Hakusho, GTO, and a certain show called Naruto. Yeah, so Mysterious Cities of Gold. Gary, fire away. Did you see this as a...
Okay, well, basically, Mysterious Cities of Gold charts the journey of a young boy, and I'm trying to think of his name because I didn't
Esteban.
Do research. Esteban, of course, it was Esteban. And he basically ends up kind of, I'm just trying to think exactly how the beginning of this the story goes, but he ends up on a quest to find the mysterious cities of gold. And along with him, he kind of meets new characters. Initially, I think he's traveling with a gentleman by the name of Mendoza, who kind of is like the kind of, is the kind of captain of a ship.
Isn't he kind of a, like a, and sort of a, like a, He's a bit like a guy of dubious morals, isn't he? Or is that another
character? Yeah, he is a bit. It kind of, Mendoza to begin with is all about the money, but without being too spoilerific, as the story progresses, Mendoza seems to become somewhat of more of a good guy than you kind of give him credit for. And he kind of looks out for Esteban and the other two, which is Tao is one of the characters they meet who travels with them, and a young girl who they rescue, whose name I've forgotten again because I'm terrible.
Let me just check where we are. Yeah, it is. There's Zia and Tao.
Yeah, that's
Mendoza.
It.
Yeah,
because Zia's actually of royalty, and I think that is the original part, is that Mendoza was supposed to capture her because there was a bounty placed on her, but he kind of has a change of heart and they end up going questing for the mysterious seeds of gold, because supposedly it can only be opened with a specific pendant. Which Esteban conveniently has half of, and Zia somehow has the other half. But they don't know why, because Esteban's not of royalty or anything like that. And there's a lot of, obviously, other mercenaries and bad guy types that are all after the mysterious seeds of gold and trying to find it. And different episodes would have them battling and trying to outwit different kind of characters. But it was the first show that I watched as a kid where I was aware that there was actually continuity, in that every new episode would always recap what happened in the previous episode. Not only that, it would show a small snippet of what was to come next. And the story obviously then followed on into one long arc. It felt like it went on forever, though. It was a very long series.
I think it was. Yeah, 39 episodes. I think have fond memories of it. I kind of get the feeling that my fond memories are sort of inherited other people's fond memories of it, because I think, thinking back as a kid, I did find it awfully long. It was like, when are they going to find this lost city?
I'm sure, like, my memory of it as a kid is that I was watching it on Children's BBC for a period of over 2 years. I don't know how long it ran on BBC 4, but that was how long I thought it lasted. I don't know if they perhaps showed like 6 weeks of it, then took a break or whatever.
Mm. Apparently it was shown twice on Children's BBC.
That probably why.
In 1986 to 1987, and then again in 1989.
But this one was one of the few where I actually did see the conclusion, which I'm not going to spoil on here. But
unlike
Ulysses, I never saw the last episode, and I never saw the last episode of Dogtanyan.
Oh, goodness.
Which I was bitter about. But I actually did see the last episode of The Mysterious Cities of Gold, which was cool.
Was it a great finale or not?
It was pretty epic, actually. Well, I remember being, as a kid, on the edge of my seat, kind of stuff all kicking off. Because the vehicles and stuff you got in this series were really cool. Like, Esteban gets this giant golden condor that he can pilot and fly around. And kind of as a kid, all that kind of stuff was just amazing.
Mm. This probably explains your love for Jason and the Wheeled Warriors as well, no doubt. But yeah.
Yeah.
But I've also read about this.
If it's got vehicles in it that are pretty cool, I'm going to like it.
True. But yeah, I've also read about this at Jean Chalapon, is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, I think so. Who
seems to, obviously, the guy who did the whole Deke thing, and he's behind a lot of the shows. He's announced there's going to be 3 new seasons of this in 2011, which is this year. Is that going to happen?
I've no idea.
I don't know whether this is a malicious rumor or not, but according to what I've read, it's going to be 3 new seasons, 26 episodes each, and it's planned for release this year, but
we shall see.
Yeah, we'll see.
It'd be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got, they did release it on DVD over here, and I assume it's doing quite well if it's still quite expensive. Because either that or they've still got loads of stock. If it'd been knocked down in price, it wouldn't have been doing very well. So it had like a huge following, I think, of people who were really wanting it to come out on DVD, sort of both within the anime fandom community and then probably a lot more outside as well.
Mm, yeah,
I think it's very fondly remembered. But my memories, I think, are tempered by the fact, it did seem to go on very long.
Yeah. I think it was one of those things that you kind of, up until recently, until they actually released it on DVD, it was one that was wanted on DVD for such a long time. And I think it was kind of, that was what was making people's memories of it kind of grow fonder, because it was kind of, it wasn't in production, it wasn't on DVD anywhere, there was no clips of it on YouTube. It was very much kind of, until the DVD release, you only had your memories of it to go on, and all you could remember was that it was just this very long, epic story, and that it was very cool.
And it's the theme tune again.
Oh, yes, and yeah, the theme tune was awesome. The other thing that kind of was interesting was after every episode, you would have this kind of live action segment with a narration, and they would basically be talking about, wherever the specific episode was set, they would do like a piece, detailing where some of the facts or some of the events in the episode came from. So if the episode was about a village where the youngest daughter or whatever was sacrificed or something, they would kind of do this live action segment where you'd actually kind of get where they got these stories from, because apparently it seemed like they did a lot of research for it, a lot of kind of like Inca mountains and stuff like that, and they would show you like clips of it and stuff, and that supposedly these mountains did actually years ago have cities of gold, but then they all got plundered.
Educating as well as entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't remember.
I wouldn't have remembered that if it wasn't for the DVD, because I remember when it first started happening, I was like, wait, I don't remember this. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was on the original.
Okay, I found the thing I was looking for now. Yeah, I don't remember that at all, so maybe they did. maybe they cut it off for the BBC one and you've had false memories implanted by the... or if it was there.
Who knows?
If it was there, maybe that was another reason why I didn't like it.
Yeah, just kind of this random live action bit where you see like this crazy.
Stop teaching me things. There was a show in 1975 in Japan called Adventures of Pepero the Andes Boy, which has a remarkably similar plot to Mysterious Cities of Gold.
Dun dun dun.
Let me try to find it here. It was so there's this boy who's sets off in search of the mythical El Dorado that his father had gone looking for and disappeared, trying to find it. Which I believe is also the plot of Mysterious.
El Dorado is referenced in the opening narration of Mysterious Cities of Gold.
And also there's a golden condor in Adventures of Pepero. I don't believe it is a giant robot. I think it's just a magical golden condor. But I'll put a link up to that. The wiki page about that as well.
The condor in Mysterious Cities of Gold was definitely mechanical.
Yes, I suspect it's not so, but I think it's probably not a shared influence. It might be a slight influence, but I suspect they have a shared influence in Gordon Bennett. I can't remember. There was definitely interest in that sort of thing in the 70s by I can't remember the author. It's the idea that so the gods there were sort of spacemen, so to speak. Oh, I can't remember what on earth the book was called, but it's been discredited since then because they found those like huge lines cut into the ground.
Oh, right, yeah.
And people thought, oh, it's places for people to land spaceships. Basically the same thing like Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skulls.
Oh, let's not discuss that.
Please. That same sort of nonsense.
That's probably all that rubbish that they were putting at the end of the episode where they were getting their nonsense from.
Yeah, so there was definitely an interest in that in the 70s, and that definitely spread out into the 80s, because I remember reading that being into that sort of thing probably when I was sort of 11 or 12.
You a big alien guy?
Alien... Not really, not now. Maybe it was when I was 11 or 12, but I'm not that keen on science fiction.
I used to be when I was, early teens, used to watch The X-Files religiously. Then when the story got a bit too far-fetched, even for me as a teenager, then I stopped.
Oh, so there is nothing out there?
Oh, no, I didn't say that.
Oh, right. Still some fear.
I keep an open mind, just a very cynical, skeptical one.
So that was Mysterious Cities of Gold.
And next it is Inspector Gadget from 1984.
I was just going to say I'm resisting the urge to stop singing the theme tune.
This one was a co-production with TMS themselves, and there was all sorts of assistants in the animation, notably one from... Toei Animation, however you want to pronounce it. who obviously a huge elder statesman of Japanese animation, founded in 1948. They were breeding ground for talented animators, had a lot of prestige in the 60s with their animated films, but they whittled it all the prestige away bit by bit. They're famous for pretty much everything. One Piece, Dragon Ball, sort of the Go Nagai peak years in the early 70s, Sailor Moon, loads and loads and loads of stuff.
Impressive.
But yeah, a lot of it is from TMS early on in the series. So Inspector Gadget. This was a huge part of my childhood because there was a lot more episodes of it than the things we've discussed so far. Though looking at the Wikipedia page when I was doing research, I definitely hadn't seen some of the later seasons because there's a character who I had never heard of mentioned on there.
I was going to say, didn't they get a revamp of it where he had mini like gadgets?
That was much later, I think. It's gone through various.
Reboots then?
Oh yeah,
I didn't see any of that, but I remember seeing things of it advertised on DVD in shops, and I'm thinking I don't remember that.
Apparently, there was a character
again. 1984 again strikes me as early, so I'm guessing Inspector Gadget was another one that ran for quite a few years or repeated a lot.
Must have rerun after rerun, surely.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who was it. ITV over here rather than BBC, because I think I mentioned in an earlier episode about how watching Jace, the Wheeled Warriors, required me to kind of be able to catch the Anglia TV signal because it wasn't being shown on Yorkshire or Central. I kind of think maybe was Inspector Gadget on ITV and it may have just been sort of at different times depending.
I honestly can't remember. Yeah, I'm just trying to think. It's kind of one of those things where I associate the cartoons with presenters but then forget what channels the presenters were on. But I actually can't remember who was who used to present Inspector Gadget prior to it starting.
IMDb might tell me. But yeah, anyway, so basically, it's get smart, but Smart is now a cyborg detective. Agent 99's now his niece, and he's got a dog who's more competent than... Oh, he had a dog, though, in Get Smart as well. But
What's the dog calling Inspector Gadget again?
Brain.
Brain,
that's right, yeah.
Dynamite in the brain.
Yes.
Loose tie in there.
It's kind of like the Hong Kong Fooey thing, where... Mm-hmm. Obviously in Hong Kong Fooey, it was Spot, wasn't it? The cat, the striped cat was called Spot, who did everything. And then Hong Kong Fooey took the credit. Well, he didn't even know that he was taking the credit. He actually thought that he didn't know. Such was his incompetence. But obviously, Inspector Gadget also had Don Adams, who was Maxwell Smart from Get Smart, doing his voice.
I did not know that.
Yeah. If you've never seen the original Get Smart from the 60s, do go and watch it. It's excellent. Don't let the remake put you off.
I've seen the remake. Well, I've seen half of the remake. That was enough.
But no, the TV series was created by Mel Brooks and Buck Henry, and it is excellent. Really, really good stuff. Holds up today.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Inspector Gadget, where have you been ever? I mean...
I think even my nephews have seen Inspector Gadget. It's,
yeah.
I think it's one of those kind of, I don't know if timeless is quite the right word, because I don't think I could sit now and watch that many episodes of it without raging at the fact that Inspector Gadget isn't fixing all the crimes and it's Penny doing it, which I was completely oblivious to as a kid. I'm pretty sure of it. And as a kid, I just remember Gadget being the cool one that did everything. I was oblivious to the fact that Penny was solving the crimes, I'm sure of it.
Gadget was never cool.
Well, he was cool.
He was a bumbling idiot.
He had that transforming car, that made him cool.
See, we're getting a big recurring theme with your interest with cars transforming.
I was a kid, it was kind of those sort of craziness things that appealed to me.
Yeah. Oh, we're forgetting a key point of Inspector Gadget, the villain.
Yes.
The fact you never saw him, ever.
Yeah. It was Dr. Claw, who was the leader of MAD, and he had a cat who was called Mad Cat. A lot of thought went into that naming. Awesome. Yes, so basically each episode would start with Gadget being given a mission from Chief Quimby, his boss, who'd be hiding in something.
hand him a self-destructing... to try and avoid being blown up by the note that he's given him.
He'd hand him a self-destructing message, and then Gadget would somehow end up throwing the message onto wherever Quimby was hiding and blowing
Fantastic.
Up. And then Gadget would blunder his way through the investigation.
He would always suspect Brain as being the villain.
Would it be Brain, or would it just be somebody...
No, because that was the thing. Brain would always be in disguise, and he'd always be trying to keep an eye on Gadget.
Yes, yeah.
Penny would send Brain to keep an eye on Gadget while she solved the actual crime. Gadget would always suspect Brain as being the actual spy or culprit, and ignore the real spy or culprit most of the time.
Yes.
Look, you say you never actually seen Claw. I remember a thing on the internet a good few years ago where they released like a figurine from, like, obviously Inspector Gadget, and that had Claw's face on the figurine of Claw.
Really?
Yeah. It's not worth looking for. It'll spoil the... It's better not to have seen his face.
It is better, because...
I have these horrible visions
of
him having a face like the MAD logo.
No, he's not Alfred E. Newman. But then, the thing
that would also be amusing.
The thing which I hadn't... Either I'd watched from my memory or had never seen, but apparently in the second season... Inspector Gadget had a sidekick called Corporal Cape Man.
Yeah. I don't remember that.
Apparently he was a superhero of some kind. Let me have a look.
Wow.
Season two in America ran 1985 to 1986. It was only 21 episodes. So maybe they, quite possibly. They might have only bought the first season to show
it. Just reran the first season again in different order.
Apparently that is what they did in America to begin with until they did those extra episodes.
I'm correct in assuming that Gadget didn't have a conclusion. I definitely didn't see him capture Claw ever.
No, don't think so.
You can't capture Claw. You can't.
No.
And, yeah, as you mentioned about him having little gadgets, that is Inspector Gadget and the Gadgetinis.
Yeah, that looked shocking.
Which was later. Though that is not half as shocking as Gadget Boy.
Gadget Boy?
Gadget Boy. Which is...
Is that... Like an Astro Boy / Inspector Gadget cross?
It's sort of like a more sort of Inspector Gadget babies.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, dear. Yes,
I'm sure it's not as bad as Matthew Broderick's portrayal of Inspector Gadget in the live action.
I've never seen that. How does French Stewart's portrayal in Inspector Gadget 2 compare to Matthew Broderick's?
I've never seen the sequel.
I've not seen the sequel. The first one was enough to put me off.
Yeah. And I'm sure Deke had a big input with the film. I'm sure.
Really?
Yes.
They made Claw and Gadget the same person.
Yeah, because it was, I think Andy Haywood, who's the guy who came on board later, was definitely involved.
That, yeah.
Was definitely involved.
Yeah. IGN also, reading the facts here, in January 2009, named Inspector Gadget as the 54th best animated TV show out of 100.
Keep that list handy. I want to see if Jace is higher than Cops on it.
It's not.
Liar.
I don't know what the full list is, but...
Put a link to the article in on...
We'll find it. But do you think it deserves to be that high? 54th?
Probably not. I think that's sort of nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, rose tinted glasses syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it had a very good theme tune, and it had...
Very, very good.
It had Don Adams in it, which was helpful. I think without him doing the voice, I don't think it would be as near as good. And the animation was pretty good early on.
I actually can't remember
For this sort of show.
Mm.
It sort of shared a lot of staff and had made appearances with our next show.
Yeah, I was going to say, I recognise the music was definitely... Like, the different music in the background for different scenes was used between both.
Yeah, which is...
And I was aware of that even as a kid.
Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats.
Now, this was an awesome show.
We had it over here. It was called Heathcliff and Cats and Co., wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I actually just remember it as Heathcliff, because you had the catchy intro that just referenced Heathcliff.
Yes. There was a previous Heathcliff show.
With Marmaduke.
Yes, which was animated by somebody else.
Yeah. I always remember having this row because they turned Marmaduke into an actual film in recent years. And I was like, why haven't they turned Heathcliff into a film? Because it's better. And also, the Cadillac Cats is a lot better than Marmaduke. Riff Raff, which was the leader of the other gang. I'm kind of dipping into the narration here, but his gang was so much cooler than Marmaduke. But anyway, I just want to throw that out there.
They were a pretty cool gang, yes, as gangs went.
Yeah.
I suspect they may have, I suspect the character of Cleo may have made an impact on various furries.
Yeah, probably.
Which was the love interest cat, who was drawn a little too much like a human being.
Yeah, she was actually thinking about it.
If you compare it to Heathcliff's love interest cat, which was Sonia, who just kind of looked like a fluffier white version of Heathcliff.
Yeah, she did actually.
Whereas the other ones, Cleo had more human proportions.
Mm.
But there you go. Yeah, but it was a pretty good cartoon. Again, it had a really catchy theme tune once more.
Yeah, and just to please ask you, I'm going to mention the fact that Riff Raff lived in a transforming car that could transform into a caravan and a speedboat. And that could be why I liked Riff Raff. I actually preferred the Riff Raff part of the cartoon more so than Heathcliff. I never saw the two meet, though, because I know the Cadillac Cats, the other guys, you would see them in the Heathcliff cartoon section. You had the one with the rollerblades and the big kind of beefy character. But you would never see Heathcliff and Riff Raff, or at least I didn't, not together.
No, I don't recall them either. But I do, and apparently they had, like, cameos in Inspector Gadget, and Inspector Gadget had cameos in this show as well.
Mm. I missed out on that as well.
Yeah, I don't recall that, but that's what the internet is telling me. Mm. But yeah, Heathcliff was voiced by Mel Blanc, the voice of Bugs Bunny, and most other famous cartoon characters.
Fantastic.
Aha. Yeah, that was a good show.
Yeah, and it got repeated a lot. It was another thing I think Channel 4 picked up and aired before Big Breakfast.
I remember early morning runs of that, actually.
See, I actually do not remember this at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. So, yeah.
And apparently there was a Heathcliff the movie as well, which came out in cinemas.
Maybe I was mistaken then with my kind of criticism saying, why did they make a film of Marmaduke?
Yeah, maybe Heathcliff was such a big success at the cinema. Marmaduke.
Let me just check. I was wondering whether it was just episodes of the cartoon spliced together. Yes, it was. Yes.
Ah, shocking.
But that was 1986. That had been around the time Transformers the movie would have been around that time as well. And
oh wow,
G.I. Joe the movie. So, and yeah, I think they were just in the mood for releasing, trying to cash in on kids.
Movies, cinema goers.
Kids in the 80s really like cartoons. I know, I was one.
Me too.
No, I never did see any of them at the cinema. I wanted to go and see Transformers the movie, but went to see Biggles instead, I think.
I think I was considered too young, because wasn't it? It was a PG, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I didn't see it.
I was going to say, I don't think it was a U when it came out.
Yeah.
What year was it? 86?
86, so...
Oh, I see. So I think I was a little bit too young to see it. I was.
I just remembered another thing I should have had open. Let me see if I can find it. Animated Divots have a handy chronology of animation, which will tell me what else was coming out of that year.
But yeah, if there's anyone out there that actually likes Marmaduke, watch Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats, because it's better.
It is. I mean, it was Ruby Spears did the Marmaduke and Heathcliff one, and. It was a 1980s Ruby Spears cartoon, i.e. horrible.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next one. I did put a note that I had seen this, but I'm not sure I actually had, which was also in 1984, a show called The Littles, which was TMS again, based on, I think, John Peterson's books, and I think I just may have got it mixed up with The Borrowers. It was something I thought I'd seen, but then went onto YouTube to actually look at the opening credits. I had no recollection of it whatsoever.
See, I was a complete other way around. This rang no bells. I YouTubed it, and I was like, perhaps I have seen this, unless it's just a false memory of The Borrowers, as you say. So, nah.
Next up is something I hadn't seen until I was looking this stuff up. Is Poochie, which, let me just see whether they call it an OAV or a special, but it wasn't like a TV series, it was a one-off, and you can find it on YouTube. It's a very weird special based on the dog-themed stationery line from the 80s. It's this strange pink dog who apparently runs a newspaper, gets a letter from a boy in Egypt whose parents have gone missing up doing archaeology, and she goes to investigate with her gay android assistant, who's basically a C-3PO ripoff wearing a human mask. I should put a link up to it because it's very odd, but there's some nice mecha designs. I don't know who worked on it, but...
Might have to check it out, just out of curiosity.
Also in 1984, Pole Position.
Classic.
I do remember seeing.
I was a big fan of this. Again, it was because of the cars, because they had faces and they talked.
And talking of that, yeah, this was one thing where Aramaki was working on the mech design. And on the animation, one of the studios involved was Artmic, which stood for Arty Modern Ideologist for Creation. Which was founded in 1978 and then liquidated in 1997, and they are famous for Bubblegum Crisis, Gale Force, and Megazane 23, amongst others. So, yes, you had already seen the work of some of the people who worked on Bubblegum Crisis on this very show.
Somehow embedded. Did you mention new Gale Force?
They worked on Gale Force, yeah.
I think, again, that was one of the ones that I bought on a whim that was released by Manga Entertainment, but didn't like it.
Yeah, it was like I think they released the sequel without releasing the original or something ridiculous.
Yeah,
like that.
That was the one I watched. That wasn't good.
As a lot of their releases tended to be around that time. yeah, Pole Position. What was this? This show was about talking race cars, I seem to remember.
Yeah, and they basically fought crime somewhat. It was just the fact that they could fight crime by racing somehow.
I'm guessing this wasn't super popular because it only ran to 13 episodes.
Oh.
And it was apparently shown in the UK as part of Going Live.
What was that?
It was a Saturday morning show. Was it Philip Schofield Going Live?
I think it was Philip Schofield originally.
Philip Schofield, Sarah Green.
Yeah.
Assistance from Trevor and Simon.
Did that evolve into Live and Kicking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it did. Right. I know what you mean.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
See, I watched the intro for this Pole Position. Obviously, never seen this one either. And one of the characters has a pure speed racer-esque neckerchief. So, don't know whether it was influenced by Speed Racer at all.
I'm pretty much guessing it was, yeah.
Yeah.
See, talking cars. I never really saw Speed Racer as a kid, but I did like Pole Position.
Yeah,
you'd probably love Speed Racer then.
I don't remember much about it beyond the theme tune at all. But again,
it's weird. My memory of Pole Position is a lot more sketchier than, say, Inspector Gadget and Transformers, etc. But I guess that is perhaps it was because it was only run for 13 episodes. But I just remember the cars being awesome and wanting toys of them and toys of them not existing.
No.
Yeah, the cars were wheels. Ford Mustang and Rhodey, who was a futuristic light blue coupe. They talked, yes.
Yeah, they had like a little panel with a smiley face on.
So it wasn't like a Knight Rider esque.
No, it was actually a full face. It was eyes and a mouth.
I'm guessing Knight
Rider. And they had expressions.
Knight Rider must have been part of an influence on it, though, one would guess.
Mm.
Yeah, and they were stunt drivers, weren't they? It's not race car drivers, that was it.
Yeah, because that was it. Because they had to wear, like, the crash helmets and stuff.
Yes. Very old.
Can I introduce this next one, please?
Go ahead.
The reason being, basically, is a show called Rainbow Bright. And the only person out of us three who's seen it is Gary. And I have to say, it has to be the most girly cartoon I've ever clapped eyes on.
Yeah, I've seen it because I had a younger sister that was heavily into Rainbow Bright. She's about a year and a half younger than me. And she was like, she had the toys of it and stuff. So that was kind of my exposure to Rainbow Bright.
That's, I'll let you off.
So I may have caught the odd ep on TV.
And we should say this is
begrudgingly.
It was inspired by a Hallmark Cards franchise, wasn't
it? Yeah, which is a bit like Poochie. And this kind of also marks like a shift. Because like the first few things, they've come up with them themselves, haven't they? Mm-hmm. So you'll see this mysterious city was a gold gadget. The Cadillac Cats, but not Heathcliff, they've come up with themselves. But now you're starting to get like licensed characters. So Poochie was licensed, Rainbow Bright's licensed, and after this we're going to start getting loads and loads of licensed characters all coming at once.
It seems strange for a set of greetings cards to inspire a cartoon.
I think they just thought the designs were striking, or perhaps the cards were popular.
Yeah, and they've merchandised the character a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was dolls, and there was like plushies of the little sprites and stuff like that. My sister had them.
Yeah,
the sprites made good makeshift footballs, for the record.
Yeah, this wasn't just happening with Rainbow Bright either, though. I think there was other things which were... There was lots of character... They're trying to find character franchises, I think possibly due to Star Wars more than anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the success of the Star Wars toys made people go, okay, let's turn everything into action figures.
Yeah. Well, it worked for the most part.
So, yeah. So
yeah,
you,
definitely, yeah.
I think we'll wrap this episode up at this point, and then we'll be back with part two next week. Mm-hmm. You can find us at awesome-engine.com and also Dynamite in the Brain on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter @awesome_engine. You can find
me there, yeah, at @ANTASKEW. And I should also point out that Gary needs to get a Twitter.
Yeah, I guess I should. At the moment, the only thing I have on the net that I can claim is mine is my Facebook page, which is basically facebook.com/Chidomaru, which is Chidomaru. Yes, it was Naruto inspired. Yes, I came up with it years ago. I rest my case.
Okay. It's wonder you haven't got a Rainbow Bright inspired screen name.
I mean, does Rainbow Bright count as Magical Girl anime?
We'll get onto that later, quite possibly. There's another one which later we'll get onto, but that'll be next week. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame: dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.